In the work you do with gravity, would you describe yourself as a political artist?
Not necessarily. I mean, I feel like all art is political and is having an impact one way or another. And so I feel like as an artist, we all have a responsibility to pay attention to political impact of our work. I do think I'm interested in a number of things that do have political impact around physical diversity in particular. And I think it's an important time. I don't to think through how all kind of choices from casting and what kind of material you make and how you present material and who can get into your theater or not are all political choices. So I recognize that there is some activism involved in my work in terms of really trying to work to not exclude people and to make my work accessible, and then through, by extension, this sort of access services work that we do is hoping to help other people make their work accessible and to not exclude people from having an experience of live performance.
How much do you think that influenced in your specific art of doing performances and dance, that maybe dancing is kind of a form of art that is in some ways very conservative and kind of in itself against the inclusion?
I think that dance is a very big word. So I think there are definitely parts of the dance world, the like theatrical performing dance world, that have some intrinsic exclusivity. I think a lot of classical dance is really rooted in the very idea of like there's a perfect kind of body and we're trying to have this perfect kind of body and show the perfect kind of body that is the body that Louis XIV decided were the great proportions for a body to be. And I think some of those classical forms are actually rooted in a kind of exclusivity and exclusion and a pointing toward this sort of fictional ideal body. But I think that a lot of contemporary dance also is really making is a really important space to question that, and that a lot of contemporary dance and performance art are really important spaces that are quite active around asking what is a body and which bodies are important and what is beauty and what is a beautiful body and what kind of things can different kind of bodies produce different kinds of beauty or different kinds of performance. So I think there's really a wide range in that. And then I think also, you know, dance, it's like lots of people go to clubs and dance. And so I think dance is the art form that the body is really at the center of. So I think it has both the possibility for being a really productive site for change. And it also is a kind of place where certain kinds of ideas about bodies are also conserved and can be slow to change.
You are working in the US in San Francisco as well as in Berlin. Have you experienced any differences in the dance scenes and the feedback on your work?
Sure, yeah, quite a bit. And I mean, I think this is a little bit maybe what I've made my career about, is being a kind of a smuggler of ideas back and forth. And I think when I first came to Berlin, I think people were excited about a kind of physicality that was coming out of San Francisco at that moment that we brought, and a kind of interdisciplinarity that I brought with a company called Core that I was part of. I realized very quickly, starting to work in Berlin, that I needed to sort of raise the level of my intellectual discourse around my work and think, you know, that people were asking me questions about my work that I needed to do a little bit more reading and think a little bit more of the theater and dance. in Germany in general, but in Berlin in particular. And I think there are discourses around gender and sexual preference that coming out of SEM, when I first started coming to Berlin, felt like there was a very different kind of discourse happening and a different kind of activism, and queer didn't feel like it really arrived in Berlin until 10 years later, or a kind of queer visibility felt like it made itself apparent to me anyway in a different way later. And I think around disability and the arts, there I actually wrote an article with my collaborator Claire Cunningham where we compared the sort of scene around disability and the arts in the UK and in San Francisco and the Bay Area, and also in Germany, in Berlin in particular, and kind of compared the different regional histories, some different histories and different resources that have been dedicated over those histories to create different kinds of platforms and different kinds of discourses in each of those places. So each of them has a different flavor. But I think there's also a really nice connection between the two.
Yeah, certainly you're part of this connection. Speaking of Berlin and the Tanz im August Festival right now, you and your company have developed several haptic access tours and audio descriptions. Can you explain what your work includes when you get asked to develop these kind of tours and audio descriptions? And in particular, what role has the artist of the performance for your work?
So when we do the access tours and the audio descriptions, we basically we talk a little bit to the artist, and then we watch a performance, and then we talk again to the artist. For the access tours, we select elements of the performance that would be useful to be able to have the audio description listeners, the blind and visually impaired people, come and like feel the costume or hold one of the prop objects that is manipulated on stage, or maybe walk around on the set so they can have a physical experience, a felt physical experience of the environment and the objects. And then it's about a 20-minute tour, and they're letting them touch or having them. And then the audio description is we do a kind of extemporaneous or a live improvised version that our motto is say what we see. That so we prepare and watch, and then we talk to the artist themselves about what are the important concepts or what. And then we basically sit either in the tech booth or at the back of the theater and just describe the visually meaningful elements of the performance so that people who are not seeing them get those elements and are able to make meaning or have a meaningful experience integrating those visual elements that everyone else is seeing. If there's humor, often humor is very visual, and one of the things our audio description users report often is when if they've gone to the theater and everyone is laughing and they don't know why. And then with dance, we also, because it is a very visual form, we try to describe what the dancers are doing, you know, their body parts doing different things, but also more what are the relationships on stage and what are the qualities. Quite a subjective art to try to decide what is meaningful. That's kind of what our job is. And then with Tanz im August, we worked with them a little bit last year, just as a kind of pilot project. Most of the situations we have direct contact with the artist to have this conversation about, you know, what do they see as the important visual elements, and we should sort of underline or foreground or movement vocabulary does the artist use.
You mentioned it already, since people watch it who are blind or don't have fully access to their vision itself. Speaking becomes a very important part of your work, and I asked myself if the speakers who are audio conducting the pieces or the shows? Are these professional speakers? And if you trained them or your company just trained them, how does this training work?
I'm a bit of an autodidact. That for one of my recent pieces in 2015, we did a lot of research with a couple of different audio describers and with a number of blind artists and blind directors, and spoke with them about making what are the best practices for making work more accessible. And this audio description practice is quite known in the UK. There's quite a history of it. And in the process, I discovered that this practice wasn't really happening in Berlin at all, or in California, in San Francisco. It was almost not known. And so and we had bought the equipment to be able to deliver these with these wireless headsets and transmitter. And I just sort of made an offer to Tanz im August and Tanzfabrik and Sophienseele about the possibility of doing this. And so we're sort of evolving the process and trying to acknowledge the best practices that exist, and also hopefully contributing to moving the practice forward. So
to come to the last question, I would like to ask you how you estimate the status quo of dancing and inclusion right now, and what should be done to make arts in general, or especially dancing, more accessible to all the people, and how can the scene approach this transformation?
I think people are quite engaged in the question, and I think that due to the work of a number of important activists and activist artists and spaces, that people like Claire Cunningham, who I've worked with, whose work travels a lot, and she was one of the first disabled artists to be produced at Tanz im August. And then also Anna Multa, who is one of the dance curators at Sophienseele and also at Tanzhaus in Düsseldorf, I think are really pushing and leading the charge in this. I know in Berlin we have a large fund called Making a Difference that is also working to help people, disabled people of all ages, have more professional training so that disabled people can also become professional artists, because this has been, I think, a real difficulty. So I think that these questions are getting out there. And then on the audience side, there's also really the question of people starting to talk about and notice, and when is a performance happening up a flight of stairs? That means that people, a lot of small theaters in the world don't have elevators or are not accessible to wheelchair users, and I think people just starting to register this. And artists starting to register this and going, oh, is it really okay for me to make, that's sort of installation works in galleries, but if you are forcing your whole audience to stand for 45 minutes to watch your piece, then are you excluding older people that aren't able to stand for 45 minutes and would like to maybe see your work? So I think there's a lot that can be done just by starting to think through what are the ways that my work, for artists to start think through what are the ways that their work might be just excluding people because they haven't thought of it, and maybe they just need to bring a few more chairs into their gallery or ask who can see this or who can hear this, or what are simple choices they can make that make work more accessible. And then I think there starts to be more crossover between deaf community and including sign language interpretation in some shows. And I think the more we have some regularity of audio description and sign language interpretation in mainstream theater houses, then the more crossover we get between interesting deaf artists and blind artists and blind audiences and deaf audiences. And that will be a really rich dialogue that can happen.